Welcome to the Accessible Technology Webinar Series. I am Judith Stark, the Accessible Technology Consultant for the Pacific ADA Center. The Accessible Technology Webinar Series is sponsored by the Great Lakes ADA Center and the Pacific ADA Center, both of whom are members of the ADA National Network. And we're delighted that today we actually have a speaker from the Great Lakes as our main speaker today. So that's a wonderful cooperation between the two organizations. So thank you for that, Robin. I will be introducing her in a little while. Before we get going, a couple of housekeeping points to take note of. If you are listening to the webinar, the audio is being broadcast through your computer, so please make sure that your speakers are turned on or your headphones are plugged in. You can control your audio broadcast via the audio and video panel, and you can adjust the sound by sliding the sound bar left or right. And that audio wizard is found at the top left of your screen next to the audio and video. Click on the microphone icon and it will open up and allow you to do what you need to do for your sound. If you do prefer to listen to the webinar via your telephone instead of via the computer, you are welcome to do that too, and you may call 1-712-432-3066. Passcode is 148937. So please feel free to join the telephone bridge if you need to do that. Mobile devices are also supported. These include iPhones, iPads, Android devices, Kindles, all of those kind of things. And if you do need to download the free Blackboard Collaborate app, you can get that from the Apple Store, Google Play, or Amazon. Might be a little bit late for today, but certainly for future webinar series, that would be a great way to go to if you prefer using your mobile device. Captioning. This webinar is being captioned, live closed captioning, and you can access this again at the top left of your screen next to the audio and video title at the top. You will see a little icon that says CC, and if you click on that, you will be able to have access to the captioning. You can also then, once you've selected that, you can also have the option to resize the captioning window, change the font size, and save the transcript for later if you wish to do so. As far as submitting questions is concerned, please feel free to type in your questions in the chat area text box. That is down at the bottom left-hand side of your screen, and you can either access it there or press Control M to enter the chat area. You can also do that via your mobile device, or if you are listening by phone and are not logged in, please email your questions to us at webinars@ada-audio.org. That's webinars@ada-audio.org. Okay, and please note that we are recording this webinar, and within about 24 hours after we've completed the session, you should be able to access that at the website, which is www.ada-audio.org. Last thing in terms of customizing your view, if you do want to resize the whiteboard where the presentations are, you can either make it smaller or larger. If you click on any one of the little icons on the left-hand side, directly above you, the whiteboard, you will see that there's a little drop-down menu that says Fit Page. If you click on that, you should be able to resize that according to your preference. And then also, you can move around the little boxes that are on the left by default. That's the audio and video, the chat, and the participants. By clicking on the little, looks like a little series of little drop-down lines, and click on that, and you can detach your panel, move it around, and change it according to the size that makes sense for you. Okay, and also if you do need any technical assistance, please do send a private chat message, which you can do by double-clicking on the Great Lakes ADA person in the main chat, in the main participant list, and a little tab will drop down and you can enter your comments in there. Again, email your comments to webinars@ada-audio.org, or you can call 877-232-1990, and that is for Voice TTY. Okay, so having said that, as far as the questions are concerned, we will be keeping a track of those questions to allow Robin to answer them at the end of the session. However, please do feel free to enter them at any time during the session, and we will keep a note of those. We're very pleased to be able to welcome Robin Jones for today, talking about designing accessible webinars. It's a very apt topic for what we do. And Robin Jones is from the Great Lakes ADA Center and one of the sponsors of the webinar series. So it's really great to have her with us. So thank you, Robin. In addition to being the director of the Great Lakes ADA Center, she's also an instructor at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And the center serves the states of Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin. And the center provides training and technical assistance on the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 and issues relating to accessible information technology. Robin has served as a director since the center's inception since 1991. And formerly, she served as a director of an independent living center in the Chicago area and as an occupational therapy practitioner at the Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago. So you can see she has extensive experience as a trainer regarding ADA for business, government, and disability organizations, and has been actively involved in assisting businesses and government to meet their obligations under the ADA, and is recognized as a key resource regarding ADA compliance. So an absolute delight to have her with us. And at this point, Robin, I'm going to hand it over to you, and welcome, and please go ahead with your presentation.
Great. Thank you very much, Judith, and welcome to everyone who's joined us for this session today. I hope that it will be useful for you, and you'll get some pointers and some ideas as you reflect on what you're currently doing at this time. Many of you are probably already engaged in offering webinars and distance education using various platforms, and one of the things that our goal and our objective of this session is that you'll at least begin to think, if you're not already, about some of this very specific issues and things that you need to consider as you're designing and delivering an accessible event, because of course that's very important to ensure that everyone has access. And because of the distance nature of these kinds of programs and things, sometimes we always don't know our audience or don't know all of the needs of our audience, and so it really does take planning up front to ensure that we have full accessibility and we don't have that surprise aha moment, because in many of these situations it's difficult to backtrack and make things accessible after the fact, or a lot of time and effort and energy will get spent in doing that, and that can be definitely problematic, as we all know who are engaged in these things on a regular basis. So hopefully, again, as I said, you'll have some good takeaways from today's session. Just to review what I'm going to be talking about, I'm just going to do some definitional things because we do sometimes have some confusion over terminology. Just spend a few minutes on the issues of barriers and the needs of the different user groups with disabilities that we'll be highlighting, or at least things I'll be talking about today are going to be specifically pertinent to. I'm going to go through and talk about accessibility features and things to look at and things to be concerned about as you do select your various platforms that you may use. I'm going to talk about participant and moderator considerations, and also the issues of presentation materials and content considerations as well from an accessibility perspective. And we'll end with just a real short discussion of the issue of recording and archiving of these kinds of programs and the considerations, again, when we're looking at accessibility. So just to start out with the whole issue, sometimes you'll hear something about doing a webinar or they're doing a webcast. Just for clarification purposes, a webinar is a live seminar or other presentation that takes place on the internet that involves the ability to give, receive, and discuss information, whereas a webcast is the transmission of data that's one way and does not typically have interaction between the presenter and the audience. So that's just a technology or a terminology issue. So why do we use webinar technology? Well, webinar tools are in large part affordable. They eliminate a lot of the issues of distance and things of that nature for people. They provide all of the aspects of a live and in-person presentation in regards to allowing you to use visuals, allowing you to use video and things of that nature. And of course, just the convenience of being able to do it from a computer or now with mobile technologies and things, makes it a lot very convenient. And it's typically, again, broadcast over a broadband network location from anywhere you are. So it could be, opens things up to being national and international for that matter. They enable synchronous communication. They can communicate with the audience in a synchronous format and provide immediate feedback to your learner and your participant. The tools can be used to facilitate interaction. You can lecture, interact with the audience, and facilitate collaboration in a real-time format. And you can also do the issue of things being archived to be done for later on. So whether you're viewing content with people live or those who have missed a real-time session, it enables people who have quote-unquote missed the session or who are not able to join you to still get the information and engage in the content that you have delivered. So we have a wide variety of groups that are using webinar technology. So higher education institutions are obviously using it for course instruction. They're also using it for continuing education and for other types of things. Corporations using it to facilitate meetings, staff training, especially when you have corporations who are spread across the country or maybe, again, internationally. Sales and marketing firms are using it to promote goods and services to their customers. Government entities are using it, again, for community events and outreach, for staff training. And then, of course, your consultants and experts who are using it for training and technical assistance to deliver information to their audiences in a variety of different ways and often more cost-effective way than having to travel for a day to do a two-hour presentation. A lot of lost time, a lot of lost effort. There are some implications as we go in and we're going to be talking today. I want just spend a moment on the issues of legal implications for the use of, as I have in here, quotes, accessible webinar technology. So while we know that we've been using the whole concepts of distance learning and webinar technologies and things like that for a long time, oftentimes people aren't thinking about it in the context of, well, what is my legal obligation to do this? So in the context of federal government, you've got the issues of needing to be concerned about your obligations as Section 508 of the Rehab Act, access to electronic information technology that's procured by federal agencies, as well as Section 504 of the Rehab Act in terms of the obligations because of the being recipient of federal funds or in the context of federal government, the fact that they are operating a program with the use of federal funds. So you've got that tie from the legal context of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. For state and local governments, it's been made very clear by the Department of Justice that Title II of the ADA applies to web-based technologies being used to deliver programs and services. So the issue of I'm going to be delivering anything through a web-based medium, I definitely have to make sure that it's accessible, meeting Title II of the ADA. We don't and have seen some litigation in this area. We know that Title II entities have had these issues addressed in many of the settlement agreements reached by the U.S. Department of Justice. We know that OCR, through Office of Civil Rights and Department of Ed, has addressed this issue with educational institutions through settlement agreements and things of that nature as well. The Department of Justice issued advanced notice of proposed rulemaking back in 2010, indicating that that was their plan and intent to move forward with rulemaking as related to web-based information for Title II entities. Now, this was in their regulatory calendar for 2013 to issue regulations for Title II of the ADA. It did not occur in 2013. Latest we hear is that they are continuing that effort and that something will occur in 2014 that will specifically amend the, or at least put notice or put rules out for public comment to amend the Title II regulations of the ADA to specifically address and talk to web-based information, and that will include the potential of any standards or guidelines for accessibility of those. And so, of course, we know that it's currently covered. We know that it's something that has been the interpretation of Department of Justice on the courts to be covered. So, of course, we want to make sure that people are aware of it, even in the absence of current specific standards of that nature. Using the standards that already exist through the World Wide Web Consortium as well as Section 508 regulations. So there are standards, there are regulations that are out there already that address the issue of accessible web-based information. So we can turn to those as we apply them to this technology. And then, of course, we have our employers, private employers with 15 or more employees who are covered under the ADA Title I provisions. For employment, and so would need to be addressing these issues as a reasonable accommodation for employees who have disabilities. So it's important, not just from the context of those issues of education or access to the public, but also from an employment as more and more employers are using these technologies. Just one little asterisk there is to just note that in many times your places of public accommodation, your privately owned and operated entities, as well as your private employers, are often covered by Section 504 of the Rehab Act and may have some dual obligations due to the fact that they are recipients of federal financial assistance, or they may be a contractor of the federal government. So it's important to note those. Just as a secondary note, in 2010, when the Department of Justice issued its advanced notice of proposed rulemaking, it did indicate that they had an intention to move forward with regulations for Title III of the ADA as well for web-based information. So it is to be anticipated, even though they are moving forward, or at least stated in their regulatory calendar, moving forward with Title II regulations, we do anticipate that most likely following the issuance of any Title II regulations, you'll see issuance of Title III regulations as it relates to the ADA and web-based information as well. Just want to talk for a minute here in relationship to how we look at the barriers or understand the barriers faced by individuals with disabilities related to that issue. So when you look at the different types of disabilities and such that are impacted here, that you need to look at different types of issues, so auditory, difficulty hearing sounds or different ranges of decibels. This is often referred to individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing. I'll talk specifically about those limitations in a minute. Visual, we're talking about individuals who have difficulty seeing images, light, or color. Different degrees of loss occur, which is often referred to as somebody being blind, low vision, or colorblind. Limited fine or gross motor skills is, again, difficult to manipulating small objects with hands or moving limbs. And cognitive disability, those who have difficulty processing information that's delivered orally, visually, or both, including memory loss. And this includes individuals who may have a clinical diagnosis of learning disability, autism, traumatic brain injury, attention deficit disorder, Down syndrome, etc. So when you look at the implications for those different groups, if we start with that group that has got auditory limitations, so any content that's delivered orally needs to also be available through an integrated streaming text or captioning window. And to be individuals using those technologies, if captioning should have the ability to enlarge the font, should have the ability to resize and relocate the captioning window to their convenience for their viewing, also should have the option to be able to save the caption. So these are features that you would want to look at and would be standards for what would constitute the issue of captioning being available and being accessible. Availability of any kind of text messaging like chat, so that you're not requiring that somebody have to actually be able to talk during a session, so they would be able to interact with the presenter or the other participants. It should not ever solely be reliant upon sounds to alert participants to key events that are taking place in the session. So for raising hands or for participating in polling or anything, or video, et cetera, you would want to make sure from an accessibility perspective that you have alternatives. And you also want to make sure that your recording captures the captioning so that it's displayed during the playback. And this is the issue that comes into play I'm going to talk about a little bit later, about the issue of often people will contact us or talk to us when we're talking about the platforms that they're using, and they'll say, well, you know, we can contract with a service that will provide captioning via the internet, and so we can have somebody connected to our platform, and then they can have a separate URL where they can watch the captions take place. Well, that's very problematic, and from an accessibility perspective, would not be considered to be really fully accessible, and I'll talk about that in more details in a second. For those with individual disabilities, we're talking about issues in the use of a platform or considerations, that the controls should be able to be accessed and enabled using keyboard commands, not just my mouse. Individuals with visual disabilities often are using screen reader software, so they're using keyboard commands to navigate. They are not using a mouse because a mouse requires vision to know where that cursor is. Controls should all be labeled so they can be read by a screen reader. What I mean by that is that there should be a text equivalent for the controls. So as I try to navigate through the various controls, whether it be the audio, it be access to the chat, it be any of the features that a participant would use or even a presenter would use, that they should be labeled so that an individual could actually read them using their screen reader software. The tabbing order should be sequential, so if I'm tabbing through to find the various elements in the platform, they need to be sequential and not jumping all over so I don't know where I am or where I should be. All content should be scalable, so it's not distorted when magnified with assistive technology. So an individual who may have vision but is needing to magnify the screen and using their own built-in magnification system within their software in their programs, they need to be able to get the same view of the information so that they're not having the content be distorted. Audible notifications of key events in the sessions need to be available. So as I was in the previous with individuals who had who were deaf or hard of hearing, I would say that you can't be reliant upon audible notifications, but it's very key that there are not audible notifications because of individuals who are with visual disabilities can't see anything that is presented visually, so they must have the audible to notify them that different features are being accessed or being used. User-defined color, contrast, and themes should be able to, again, make changes in the system to be able to indicate things so that the system should allow me to be able to customize for those types of things to meet my own individual needs due to my vision-related issues, so high contrast and such. All session content should be readable by a screen reader, including the text content of a PowerPoint slide, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. This includes any alt text of images, charts, graphs, or tables that are made available. So, for example, if I was to provide somebody with a PowerPoint presentation that had been appropriately formatted and I had added all of the alt tags and things of that nature to the actual PowerPoint presentation and I provided that to somebody, let's say as an email attachment or something for them to review, they would be able to do so with their screen reader software. However, when you convert and you use a PowerPoint presentation and you convert it into any of the webinar platforms, through that conversion process, many of the properties that are available through PowerPoint for one to be able to view those kinds of images and charts and graphs are lost in that conversion. And so you can't rely on what you may have structured or how you may have structured that PowerPoint presentation to include all of those accessibility features when you're using the platform. You have to know the platform, know how the platform is actually dealing with that PowerPoint presentation, and then what you may have to do, and I'll talk about that a little bit as we go along as well. Individuals with limited fine gross motor movements are going to have issues related to keyboard navigation. Any system you choose or identify should have full keyboard navigation through all interfaces of the system, including secondary windows that are available to users. Keyboard navigation should be available through major modules, the whiteboard, the chat area, audio controls that are most typically used by your participants. And there should be shortcut or accelerator keys to navigate key interactions for hand raising, polling, et cetera. And what becomes key here is obviously not only that your platform you used has this, but also that you're conveying that information to your users, because there is not necessarily a standard for one program over another in regards to what shortcuts are going to be used. So platforms may have specific shortcuts unique to that platform, and it's going to be important to provide that information to your users because they can't necessarily depend upon any specific standard across platforms. Individuals with cognitive disabilities, some of the considerations, again, need to be able to respond verbally with microphone or by typing into a chat room if there is any interaction between the presenter and the participants. Have the ability to save whiteboard material for further review outside of a session. So for memory loss and things of that nature, if I need to review that information or review it more slowly than may have been presented during the presentation. The ability to use a captioning window and auditory input simultaneously. Again, many individuals with different kinds of learning disabilities and stuff may actually need to be viewing the content, oral content visually, as well as listening to it at the same time. And the ability to record content for weekend review at a later time, and to control the speed of the content delivery as well. Again, for somebody who may need to review the information, who may need to slow down that information, specifically in the archive of that. Although, as a presenter, considerations should always be given to the speed of one who is speaking, because not only is it an issue for the captioner to be looking at these things, but you also have to take into consideration the issues associated with the individuals who cognitively often don't think about.
Robin, can I just interrupt for 1 second, please? Somebody had a question. He wanted to know if it is required to save captioning for webinars. Could you address that?
Sure. The issue of whether it be required to save the captioning, the feature of allowing an individual to save the captioning, that's basically their note-taking. So it becomes the issue of saving or allowing individuals to save on their own, or some way for you to be able to make that information available. So it's no different than how I might be looking at it from the context of, let's say, a classroom or a live training situation where you have individuals who are using these different technologies. Could be a sign language interpreter in a live session, or could be using the real-time captioning in a live session. If I'm watching visual content and I'm also following along with the oral content, my ability to take notes into that. So it becomes problematic for individuals who are trying to follow along with these things to be able to do that. So somehow being able to make that information available to someone is really an important issue for individuals in that regard. So that's why we talk about the ability to be able to save that information so that they can review it as their note-taking in the future. So I'll go ahead and keep going.
Thank you.
Typical webinar components that we look at when we're looking at any platform that we're talking about, you typically have a whiteboard, which is the viewing area for your visual content, such as your presentation, your documents, your multimedia, et cetera. The whiteboard itself is going to differ from program and how that used and how it's looked at. But the key issue is going to be that typically each platform is going to convert whatever you are using to a different format. So when I load a PowerPoint presentation, for example, into the platform we're using, which is Blackboard Collaborate, the Blackboard Collaborate system converts the images of each PowerPoint slide to be a JPEG slide. So it extrapolates the text from that slide, and it then produces a JPEG image of that slide, and the text of that slide is saved in the background, which is then used by or accessible to someone who is using a screen reader in the system. Each system is going to be, again, a little bit different about that, but it's going to be something of concern that you're going to want to look at is what happens to the whiteboard, how is the information on the whiteboard made accessible, and what is the platform doing with that content so that you can be assured that somebody would be able to have access to that content. So how you and I, if we have vision, are able to read across the slide, how is that same slide content being made available? If I'm loading other content, if I'm loading a document, if I think I'm going to load a Word document, I need to know what my platform does with that Word document. So some platforms will only accept JPEG images for loading. Well, that's going to negate my accessibility of that unless that content is going to be extrapolated somehow and made available in text behind the scene so that a individual using a screen reader, again, is going to have that access. So I need to understand what formats are going to be loaded and how that content is going to be displayed in the whiteboard so that it's accessible to individuals using a variety of different content. So for my example I gave you earlier, or the comment I made earlier about individuals who maybe are using magnifying, in the context of an image that I might be saving onto or might be loading onto the whiteboard, a JPEG image is scalable. Other formats may not be scalable, so you have to look at that issue similar to what you would look at if I was going to be loading content onto a website, and certain formats are not going to, so a bitmap is not going to be accessible, it's not going to, a bitmap image is not going to scale, that's going to become distorted if I magnify it. So I need to be aware of that, and I need to take consideration of that as I'm using my various different materials. Other components, chat area, typically your interactivity window for written questions and comments, et cetera. So each platform is going to offer that opportunity for entities to interact or individuals to interact with the presenter or others that are participating in the event. So the considerations here is going to be assured that the text in that chat area is going to be accessible to someone using a screen reader again. So is that transmitted as real text that can be then accessed, and is it navigable for an individual to be able to not only enter chat into the chat area, but also then to read what has been entered into the chat area. So it's a consideration when I go to look at and identify the platform that I am going to be using. Participant list is the typical, again, often your platform will give you, your administrators, options to hide the participant list or to show the participant list. But in situations where I'm looking at individuals interacting with each other, potentially sending messages to presenters or sending messages to other participants, et cetera, that participant list is going to be important to be able to, again, have navigation, to know what permissions I have, to know and understand that, to be able to read across and navigate, again, with a screen reader to be able to discern what options are available. Also to be able to scroll, to be able to identify individuals so that I can do, let's say, as an example, a private message. Or you saw earlier where we indicated if you had technical assistance issues in this particular platform, you could identify the coordinator of the program to send them a private message. So a keyboard command to be able to identify or scroll through and to navigate through that information is going to be a critical feature to ensure that everyone has the same access, because again, my mouse is not going to be useful to me from a visual component if I am blind or have low vision and have difficulty with those features. Other controls for things like the microphones, being able to turn on and off microphones if I'm a presenter or I have interactivity, oral interactivity going on between the presenter and the participants. How do I locate that panel? How do I then know how to operationalize that panel? Do I have to turn it on, microphone on and off? How do I adjust my volume? If I'm going to be using video, in my presentation, how does one navigate the video? So again, are those controls accessible? Are they labeled? Am I going to know when I'm turning video on and off? And I'm going to know who is, if I'm using video, whose image is showing. So is the individual labeled within that module so that I'm able to tell whose image, even if I can't see their image, I'm able to tell that at the present time it's showing the image of Robin Jones or it's showing the image of Judith Stark. Menu options, again, for navigation, making sure that individuals are able to navigate through these things, to be able to set their preferences, to turn captioning on or to select the captioning, to save files, whatever the various features are that a participant and or a presenter needs to access in the platform, you would want to make sure that those are accessible through being all labeled appropriately for a screen reader to use and all being able to be accessed through keystroke commands. So again, another component element to understand in choosing or selecting a platform. If you're going to be using interactive controls, and many of us do in our training and things that we do, we want to make sure, again, that those are able to be accessed, that those are, again, labeled appropriately with text so that someone using a screen reader has access, and as well as there are keyboard commands enabling somebody to enable them or turn them on and off. and disable them. So things like raising your hand or responding to a quiz that might be sent out, or use of emotions or other of the components that are available. If you have those components, if you're going to be using those components, these are critical issues for accessibility considerations in selecting your platform. And again, using those features or not using those features. Because if you are using a platform that these features are not accessible, then you cannot have your presenters use these features during the delivery of the program. Just because majority of people would be able to respond to the poll, if not everybody can respond to the poll during the session because of the inaccessibility of the feature, then you shouldn't be using those features. So you may have a platform that has some accessibility features in it, and some of the features are accessible and some of the features are not accessible. That's going to go a long way to making decisions about working with your presenters as to what content and what features they're going to use from an accessibility factor. So just because they are available within the platform does not mean you necessarily are going to use them, especially if they are not accessible. Most of the platforms provide some option for telephone connection, an integrated telephone bridge to transmit and receive audio. Big issues here from an accessibility perspective as you use these features is to ensure that any prompt dial boxes are accessible so that the text within them can be read and or that there is a keyboard command available for someone to be able to access or open or close that telephone information and gain access to that information. So again, most other programs, not everybody uses these features again. Many people don't use a telephone bridge depending on it, but if you are, this is going to be a feature of consideration from an accessibility perspective. More and more of our features are now offering mobile technology and connectivity. They offer options to access using a variety of different devices, mobile devices. But there is limited accessibility in all of these mobile apps, and you need to consider that if those are the methods that you're going to be delivering. And if people are going to be accessing using those, you need to make sure that you're conveying those limitations to those individuals so that they can be informed about that and understand what the limitations. So as our mobile apps have gotten more accessible, it's great. You have VoiceOver, you have all other different kinds of options available within your mobile app to make the, within your mobile device to make the device accessible, but just as with your computer, if the application that you're using is not accessible, it doesn't matter what accessibility features you may have in your device, you can't enable them in the actual application. So we find in the mobile apps that we've worked with that we find little to no whiteboard access for individuals who are using voiceover technology. Again, that would be somebody who is blind or low vision who's choosing to use that technology. Having difficulty with being able to navigate. So they may get oral information delivered through the app, but they would not have access necessarily to the content of the whiteboard. We have not found any of our platforms that we've looked at who have mobile apps having any captioning support in the mobile app. So that would obviously become, even though more and more people who are deaf or hard of hearing are using their mobile apps as a method and means of communication to eliminate the oral aspects of communication or to facilitate the oral aspects of communication in the platforms, the captioning has not yet been integrated into the mobile apps that we have found. Always be aware of the fact that there are going to be issues of quality based on the use of mobile apps, depending on your participants' connectivity. So whether they're connected by Wi-Fi or their cellular connection speeds are going to affect the quality of their access to. And while you not necessarily are controlling that on your end, it's something to make your participants obviously aware of if they're going to be using these things that, you know, we make it sure that people know in our instructions and our advanced information that if they are going to use the mobile app connectivity, that they have a Wi-Fi connection because it's going to be much more stable than their cellular connection speeds depending on where you are. Again, recognizing in some geographic areas you might have higher cellular connection speeds than others, but it's consideration is more likely to become an interference issue in the quality of the experience somebody has, both from an accessibility perspective as well as just overall experience in the use of these technologies. captioning modules or captioning panes, not all systems offer them, and not all systems offer them as integrated. Some systems will offer them, but it's an option that you have to purchase additionally, or you have to enable separately when you are using that platform. So these are the considerations as you look at the platforms that you're choosing or you're selecting to use, as whether or not there is captioning that's integrated. A fully accessible session is only going to occur when you have integrated captioning taking place. We often will hear from people who say, well, what if I use this platform and it doesn't have an integrated captioning module or a pane, and we contract with an external provider who uses streaming text or streaming real-time captioning over the internet, and we provide the users with a separate URL. And so they can open the meeting platform, and then they can open the separate URL and view the captioning that way. Well, yes, I guess one could say that you would then be offering that accessibility, but it's not truly an accessible, integrated experience for that person, because one, you're requiring that that person has to have two URLs open at the same time, which means that they are potentially drawing double bandwidth, which can be problematic depending on that person's connection. That person's also going to have to do a lot more manipulation in relationship to ensuring that they have a view that works for them to be able to see both the captioning at the same time as the content of the whiteboard or participating in any polling or anything of that nature. So that becomes a problematic issue. And should note that if it's not an integrated panel within the system and you're recording for archival purposes, and I'm going to talk about the whole context of accessibility from an archival perspective, without the captioning being integrated into your actual platform, that captioning is not being captured within your recording, and so now you are limiting the access from an archival perspective as well. So all of these things become considerations. So one of the things that should be looked at and addressed in selecting or looking at the platform that you're using and its accessibility. Other things that you should be looking at or taking into consideration, which do affect accessibility for many users, is the compatibility of the variety of different browsers, whether compatibility for Safari, Chrome, Internet Explorer, Firefox, Opera, etc., that might be used by a variety of different individuals. And so your compatibility is going to be a key factor. Different operating systems, Windows or Mac operating system, and its compatibility, given that you do have a variety of different users, not just from an accessibility perspective, from disability accessibility, but in the broader accessibility context for everyone. What is the availability of support for your moderators as well as your users, either through web-based support or customer service line, et cetera? Many people new to technologies, new to using these types of things, especially when using their assistive technology with these platforms, are going to potentially need support, at least initially, are going to need support, as I said earlier. There's not necessarily a standardization across platforms in relationship to keystroke commands and things of that nature. Even how your screen readers, your different screen readers, will interface with the different platforms will be different. So the issue of support being available to someone who's using different technologies so that they can be prepared so when they are engaged with the platform that they're able to interact. So if there are any separate downloads that are needed to an accessibility, like a Java accessibility bridge or something of that nature, that some platforms require, then, how do I get to that? Where's that information? How do I understand what I need on my end for my system's capabilities to interface with that platform? Also, what information you're publishing regarding the accessibility features of the platform and the availability of any technical support via website, customer service line, et cetera. So it's not just about it being available, but what are you doing to publish that information in advance so that your participants know in advance. It is my responsibility as the user of any kind of assistive technologies and in general the user of any platforms or any applications and such that I know how my system is going to interface with that and that I've checked out those things in advance. Many of you who operate these systems and do these kinds of programs on a regular basis know that you're always getting those last minute callers or those last minute emails and such from individuals who have not gone through the process to ensure that their systems are compatible, that their software is up to date, that they are able to access the platform maybe because of firewalls or other kinds of issues within their institution. The more that you can do to publish information regarding accessibility and all of these issues in advance for people will increase the likelihood that people will have an successful experience when they actually go to engage with the platform and the program itself. Some considerations here for participants or your users would be the age of their computer technology. Older personal computers may not be compatible with new technologies that are used in webinar platforms. So know who your audience is, understand what they might be using, and again, make sure that you're conveying to them what are the minimal standards that are necessary to be able to use your platform so that they know in advance whether this is going to work for them. Understanding internet speed and understand that the impact that internet speed has on sound quality or video on the user's end, making it clear that, again, wireless connections are not necessarily recommended, especially if you're going to be using something that's got a great deal of bandwidth need, audio, video, et cetera, that you're going to be broadcasting as part of your webinar. And then understanding what firewalls, organization personal system firewalls that can block access to webinar platform and what information you may need to give participants about that. Or if you're within an entity or you work primarily with an entity that has a lot of security. So for example, if you do a lot of work within the federal government, certain agencies within the federal government have very specific firewalls in place that will impact a user's ability to engage with a particular platform because of firewalls that will block temporary file downloads and things that may be necessary for someone to access or use a platform. So these are all considerations that come on the participant side, but also you have a role as an entity who might be planning or executing a program in relationship to these issues, at least from making it known to your participants what are the minimal requirements so that they know in advance whether or not they're going to experience problems or what they may need to do to problem solve those issues. Quality of speaker, availability of sound card on the computer, whether individuals are using a headset or earphones connected versus with USB or a headset jack. I mean, these are all considerations and issues that come into play for people, especially individuals who might, again, be using different kind of sister technologies who need to be using different types of ear headsets, et cetera, to also use their screen reader technology at the same time. This comes into play a lot of times with our presenters who need to potentially use their screen reader software to be able to understand their information that they might be presenting, their notes or things of that nature, but also having to interface with the audience using the platform's properties. The availability of telephone option, again, we talked about that, to receive audio. The provider may or may not provide this. And then, again, technical support that might be available. And who do I contact in the midst of a session as well as in advance of a session? Software updates, ensuring that from a user side that all software installed and compatible with one whatever is being utilized by that platform, so Windows updates or Java updates or if they're using video, you know, whatever the media player they might be using, the versions are up to date, et cetera. And then make sure that individuals have information to check platform documentation to verify any software requirements in advance. From a moderator side, the considerations, if I'm the moderator, the presenter side, determining whether or not your presenters or your participants will use headsets, microphones to transmit audio. Sound quality can be impacted by the user's equipment, and this makes a big difference. So if I have presenters who's using telephone to present and they're using a speakerphone, oftentimes the sound quality, and this has a huge impact on people who have auditory loss, who have hearing loss, because the quality, that any static that might occur in the background or any echoing that might happen because of the quality of your presenters and what they're using. So working with your presenters to get the highest quality of sound that you possibly can for transmission is really critical. conducting practice sessions with your presenters, again, so that they're aware of all of the features that you're going to be using and the accessibility issues associated with that, to address sound quality issues in advance, also to address any utilization of assistive technology by your presenter, recognizing that additional instruction may be needed, such as understanding keyboard navigation commands, orienting to the presenter interface, et cetera. So not just thinking about this from the perspective of your participant, but also from the perspective of your moderator or your speaker who may have a disability. All of these things are considerations that go into designing and implementing an accessible session. Instructing your presenters regarding accessibility to ensure that their content is accessible. So making sure that your presenters are describing all images that are relevant to the content of the slide. So if I have an image and it's been, it's of an architectural drawing, or if it's an image of a painting, or if it's an image of whatever I'm trying to convey on that slide, if it's pertinent to the content that everyone is getting and you're assuming as a presenter everyone is viewing on the slide, you must describe all those images during the process of your presentation to ensure that your users who may not have access to vision would be able to understand what's on the slide. So when we refer to, well, as you can see from the picture, well, that's not going to be very useful. Your presenter needs to be able to describe what that is on that slide. And many of our presenters are not used to doing this, and it's something that goes to bar of a universal design in presenting, but it also is really critical from the accessibility side of things. Be aware when you're running through slides, when you're referring to previous slides. This happens a lot of times when people are presenting and they're taking questions at the end. And someone says, well, on your slide, you know, number 44, and the presenter wants to go back to slide 44. And then they start to scroll up or scroll down on the screen. This has a huge impact on individuals who are screen readers, because they're technology is reading each word on the screen. So if you're quickly scrolling forward or backwards, you need to understand the impact that that has on a screen reader, because their software is trying to keep up with you by reading all of that text. And it is very distracting and interferes with the ability of someone using a screen reader to stay current with where you are on the presentation and what you're actually doing. So one of the features you want to look at is the ability to do navigation of your slides through not having to scroll forward or background. So looking at a platform that would have a navigation panel available for a presenter so that the presenter could actually select a slide to go to instead of scrolling forward or scrolling backwards. Slowing the pace of the presentation to ensure that the captioner is able to keep pace with the presenter. Also from the perspective of the participant being able to digest the information. I know this is one of the issues I am notoriously bad with. As a presenter, I struggle constantly with the speed. One of the downsides of presenting in these kinds of platforms is the lack of the interface you have with your audience to read puzzled looks or to get signs or signals. And I know through just looking at some of the comments that people have made that I have to slow down sometimes. So that is, you know, a constant issue, but working with your presenter on those particular issues in advance as well as throughout the session so that you have cues in place. So if you have a presenter who is going too fast and you're recognizing that, either getting feedback from participants or by watching the captioning and seeing that your captioner is missing content, what cues do you have in place and how can you give your presenter cues? Your presenter might be in California. They're not sitting next to you or in the next office. What cues and what does the program allow you to be able to do to alert your presenter to those issues? Also allow additional time for submitting questions to ensure that those that are using assistive technology or who have cognitive limitations have time to submit their questions in the chat area before you move on. I know it's often from a presenter side, if you don't immediately see a question, when you said if anyone has questions, you say, okay, we'll keep going. Well, somebody actually may be writing their question, but it's taking them a while to frame or form that question. So make sure that you allow sufficient time for an individual to be able to do that. Recognize you may have users who are using technology or have, because of cognitive or other limitations, taking a little bit more time to complete that process. Providing instruction to participants regarding key webinar features that will be utilized during the session in advance. You saw that we had a set of slides at the beginning to kind of orient people to the various features within the webinar platform. That information is made available to people in advance. We also review it in advance. That also goes to repeating those instructions when you're actually going to be using the feature. So for example, at the point when we go to questions and answers, we're going to repeat the instructions for how someone would submit questions when we do that, so that someone may have forgotten what the keystroke is for getting into the chat area, we're reminding them. Or if we're going to be using polling, while we may have reviewed those features in the beginning of the session, when it's time to actually do the polling, we want to repeat, not just to tell people to choose the yes or no in the panel, the participant panel, or whatever panel that's located in your webinar platform, but I'm also going to be repeating the keystrokes for that. So is it control one for yes and control two for no? So the individuals will be reminded of those things. That's an accessibility issue. Again, something that needs to be worked in with your presenters or your moderator. It's really critical that you monitor the status of your closed captioning during the session. While it's great, you set it up, you think that everything's running fine, there can be blips that occur during your program. There can be technical problems that occur and the captioning may not be operating or become inoperable during the session. You need to know that. You have to stop the session. It would not be considered an accessible session if you were to continue on with your oral content or your visual content and not have captioning working or in place. You would stop your session. You would get the captioning back engaged. You'd be working or hopefully interfacing with your captioner as to what the problem was. Did they lose their connection? Or what happened to me yesterday in a presentation that we did was our captioner lost their router. Their router went down, and it was not just a matter of them having to reconnect with the link into the webinar platform because they got kicked out, but they actually had to reboot their entire router at their location and wait for that to come back up again before we could engage. We stopped the session. We had a pause and waited till the captioner was re-engaged again before we continued the session. That's what ensures that you have an accessible session for everyone. Too often we see that individuals just continue going on and say, well, you know, when it comes back in, I'm fine. Well, your participants who are using that captioning have now lost that section or content, and it's difficult for them to stay engaged in the presentation. I'm going to move on to the issue of materials and the materials that you make available. Many of us make a copy of the handout materials available either in advance or as a follow-up to any of our sessions. People want a copy of the PowerPoint presentation for their notes. They want a copy of maybe a resource document that was made by the presenter and such. So making those accessible is a key element to ensuring that your overall program is accessible. So there should they should all be in accessible formats, electronic documents, whether that be a accessible PDF document or that be a text document. That is critical that you provide those options available. So you can provide a PDF, but you should always also be looking at providing a text format of that document as well. Materials should be available in advance as much as possible. That could be done on a case-only basis. So for example, your presenter does not want to distribute their presentation materials in advance to the audience. There could be a variety of different reasons for that, and that's fine. But you may need to be able to do so on a request basis, because someone may need that information in advance from an accessibility perspective so that they can review that information in advance or have that information to follow along with in advance because of limitations of their technology or issues related to their disability that they need to review that. This is no different than in the classroom where you might be providing, in a live session, where you might be providing a student or a participant information to review in advance, maybe to load into their own systems or to ensure that it was in a that they could convert it to in a format that was accessible for their own use. Also need to make sure that if you're using any charts or images or graphs or within a document, that there's alt text to describe the image within the handout. If I was to distribute, again, an entire PowerPoint presentation, and that PowerPoint presentation had been created so it was accessible, and all my images and graphs and such were had alt tag images, text added to those images, that's great. I can submit that and someone would be able to use their assistive technology. But when we convert something into PDF or we convert it into text, all of those alt tags are lost. They don't convert over. So I need to manually make sure that in any of my distribution of hard copy text of the handout materials that I've included or incorporated any of the alt text that appeared on any images, charts, tables, graphs within those documents. In addition, I need to consider that there could be some additional formatting that is required to ensure that the actual presentation material is accessible when it's loaded into the webinar platform. For example, in the platform I'm using here, when I convert a PowerPoint presentation, all of my alt tags on all of my images, all of my graphs, all of the accessibility that is within those features in a strictly PowerPoint presentation are lost in the conversion. So I actually have to do work behind the scenes to create text boxes on top of my images so that when they are converted into the PowerPoint presentation, that the image is going to be converted only as an image, but that text box is retained so that the screen reader is still able to read that information. So you aren't going to see, so you saw many images in my presentation so far, all of those had alt tags that I had to manually add to those slides using the features within PowerPoint so that when it was converted, that information was carried over. Many people don't think about those things. They don't pay attention to that particular issue. It's not just about navigation of the system, but it's also access to that content on the whiteboard. So again, understanding my platform, understanding what additional work I have to do prior to loading that content into the system. We also, all slides should be numbered to assist participants in staying oriented to the order of the presentation as well. This is just an example of what it would look like in PowerPoint if I was going to manipulate the slide and the content. So I would be using the selection pane option within PowerPoint. This is PowerPoint 10. And I would then reorder or add additional text boxes into my order to ensure that my slide was reading in the appropriate order for somebody, starting with the title of the slide, any text content of that slide. This doesn't affect the image of the slide itself. It will affect how the screen reader is actually using it because they're using the structure within PowerPoint to read. And so headers, headings, and things are all preserved within that, and you need to ensure that you retain that information. So you actually sometimes may have to manually manipulate that to ensure that when it's converted into the platform, it remains in the right navigation order for a viewer. Should also avoid using any dark black backgrounds. Again, from a vision perspective, any high contrast on slides in backgrounds should be avoided. Use of small text, anything less than 18 points should not be used. Even though I, on my user end, could be using magnification, just for general access, we would recommend that you don't use anything less than 18 point and avoid even use that and strive for larger fonts from a universal perspective. That eliminates the need for more people to have to use assistive technology and can just interact with the platform itself. Use, again, slide numbers to assist participants in orienting where they are in the actual presentation. As I said, when you're using tables, charts, and graphs, in the majority of our platforms, the formatting for these is not maintained when they're converted, so you may need to do additional formatting with actually descriptive information actually being added as text boxes that are then hidden but will be converted in the when the conversion takes place in the platform and will still then be usable, readable by somebody who is using a screen reader software. We get a lot of questions about the use of multimedia features within webinar platforms, and this is where it starts to get more complicated when you start to choose to use these kinds of things, because more and more technical in nature you add to your presentation, the more consideration needs to be given to the accessibility of that information and how that impacts the overall presentation itself. So use of video. Video on the majority of platforms will launch differently depending on the platform that you're using. So you need to understand that and what and how your platform that you're using performs. You need to know what formats are supported in that platform to know whether or not your video will be compatible with the platform. In the majority of platforms, the video is pushed out to the participant and actually launches on the participant's site using the media player that that participant has as their preferred or identified media player. So it will, I would then say I would load a video into my webinar platform. I would then enable the video to play, and that would then push it out to the participant. What some people have tried to do or think that they're doing and they're successful is that they are going to do a screen share. So they're going to share my desktop, for example, and then they'll launch the video on their desktop. Well, you've taken me one layer out from the webinar platform, and the accessibility of that desktop sharing is going to be very limited from anybody who's using a screen reader software or any ability to engage in any navigation, because they can't navigate keyboard and other things on your screen. That's your screen, you're just sharing it. So you impact the usability and the accessibility when you're doing that. So understand how your platform uses video, understand the accessibility, and again, a feature that you need to really look at or pay attention to if this is something that you're going to be using a lot in your presentations. If you don't, if your intention is that you don't ever use that, then that feature may not be as important in your selection of the platform, but if you are going to, something you should take into consideration, or if you even think you are in the future, because for many of us, as we purchase these licenses for our platforms, we're engaging into a year or maybe a multiple year contract or a time specified or a number of sessions that I'm buying or whatever it might be, and you don't know what your future, yes, the next one I'm doing next week, I don't have anybody that is going to need accessibility, but the one after that, maybe I do need somebody, or I've hired a new employee, or I have a new student who's coming in, or a recent registrant or something, and I didn't anticipate it, that's always going to be problematic, because going back and retrofitting, we know, is more expensive. That means I may have to buy and can't use this platform. I have to use a different platform. All of these things come into play. So just as we plan a building, it's always been we build it and they shall come, not build it when they come. The same is the context that we use here when we're looking at using these kinds of mediums for conducting training, is that we need to anticipate the need for accessibility in our selection from the platform on up in order to ensure accessibility. We don't back into it after the fact, because it will, in large part, may not even be possible in the platform that you're using, and you could have very expensive solutions that you're faced with, and again, potential in a lack of access to your intended audience. Know your audiences and their technical capabilities before choosing to utilize multimedia. If you don't know your audience, you don't know how savvy they are with their own technology, you would really want to think twice about these kinds of things, because it does require on their end some technical maneuvering. Ensure that your videos are captioned, either closed or open captioned. Open captions means that their captions are viewed by everybody. It does not depend upon the media player that I'm using. The captioning is actually embedded in the video such that it is viewable by everybody. I can't turn it on and off. That's the most preferred for all universal access and does not make it dependent upon what media player I'm using on my end. Or if it's closed captioned, again, make sure that that it is captioned. So either open or closed. Again, open being preferred in that context. Consider need for audio description depending on the content of the video. Video images may not be accessible to someone who's blind. If you've got a video that is showing something or demonstrating something, it's not just an issue of somebody who's deaf not being able to receive the oral information being conveyed via the video, but you've also got the images or what you're actually demonstrating. So if it's a video of a talking head, then it's really not as important in that context, because what we're really looking at is oral information being accessed, and so someone who is blind would have full access to that information. However, if your video is demonstrating something, is demonstrating a technique, is demonstrating or showing art or whatever it might be, so the images conveyed on that video is integral to what and the reason that you chose to use a video in this presentation or the training, then you're going to have to consider audio description and whether that audio description is provided by your presenter or the audio description is something that's available through the actual video, something to definitely take into consideration. Don't just think about video from the context of somebody who is deaf and captioning, which is often the thing that we focus on. It's often also from an accessibility perspective critical for those individuals who may be blind who are not able to see the images that you're using in your video. Streaming sound or streaming audio files can also be used during a session. However, just be aware again that do not use any audio or sound files. So I may want to play a separate sound file in my session. As long as there is captioning available, that's fine to use an audio or sound file in your presentation. But again, it has to have captioning available so that that captioning can follow along with whatever your oral content on your sound file is. So if it be music or it be somebody talking or whatever else it might be. Some features to avoid using. Drawing or writing on the whiteboard. Many platforms have features which allow you to add text or images or draw directly on the whiteboard. This application is not accessible to a screen reader. There, in some platforms, may be some limited accessibility if I was to type and using the type or the text input onto the whiteboard, but that's not in every platform. It's something, again, I would want to look at. So we see, for example, individuals will put up a slide and then a presenter will use the features to draw on the whiteboard to, let's say, circle something that they're trying to highlight in the presentation. That is not going to be, whatever you highlighted, you're going to have to, if you use that feature, you would have to describe audibly what you are actually highlighting. So, because again, if I'm blind, I don't know what you've highlighted, I don't know what you've circled, I don't have access to that information, it's not conveyed in any way, shape, or form to me through my technology, so that needs to be directed. So in some platforms, I can publish the polling results. So let's say I've done a poll and I want to show my participants what the end poll was. In platforms that we've used, in several of different platforms that we've explored and used, the polling results come up as an image. They show as an image. So I visually can see that 5 people voted yes and 2 people voted no or whatever, but that is an image. And it is an image created in real time, which means I did not have the ability to create an alt tag for that image in the system, so it's not going to be accessible. I need to orally announce that information, not rely just on my participants being able to see that information. So again, it's how I use these features and what I build into them if I'm going to use them. But we highly recommend avoiding them from an accessibility perspective. To use cautiously, the interactive features such as hand raising and emotions, these can be very distracting to participants with cognitive disabilities or those who are using assistive technologies. So for example, every time somebody raises their hand or every time somebody uses an emotion, a smiley face or whatever, a screen reader in most platforms is going to get that message that somebody did that, and their screen reader is now going to have to shift focus from reading the text of the, let's say, of the content of the slide to being distracted by the hand raising notification or the emotion notification that they use. So we really recommend you refrain from using these features while the presenter is talking to or using any content on a whiteboard to avoid confusion or create additional distraction for your users. Polling features, only utilize these features if they are accessible to screen readers and available through a keyboard command. So again, something to be looking at in your choice of a platform. If your platform has those features but they're not accessible, don't use them. Video camera feed. Many people want to connect with their audience, have their presenter be on video, have their participants be on video. It's fine. Understand the quality issues of video or bandwidth issues that interfere with the quality of that video. Also be concerned or just in how it impacts your presentation if people are having poor video or anything of that nature. Audio descriptions may be needed depending on what the video feed contains if you camera. So again, if you have a presenter or somebody who's on video, is there a description to let people know that the presenter is on video? That needs to be looked at from an audio description perspective by the moderator or the presenter describing what is being shown, a person's face or what is happening in that regard. And who is speaking, or who is being shown in video.
Hi, Robin, just a quick interruption. It's 12:15, just give you a time check.
Yes, thank you. Cautiously using issues of desktop sharing. Again, many platforms allow the presenter to share their desktop with participants. That's very limited access for a screen reader. If you're using any documents that you're going to be sharing through a shared platform, make sure your documents are available in advance so that individuals who may have difficulty with navigating once you've shared My Desktop still have access to that document. Presenters should be prepared to describe in detail all actions they're taking and describe anything that appears on the screen. They should be encouraged to develop a script to ensure that all steps and content are described, and that they also then should cue all participants when you're just continuing the desktop sharing so that your screen reader can switch their focus back to the whiteboard. So if I'm switching from desktop back to the whiteboard where my PowerPoint presentation or whatever is being conveyed, I need to cue my participants so that they know to use their necessary commands as a screen reader and such to be able to refocus back on to the whiteboard, because they're going to have lost focus on the whiteboard and be switched over to the desktop sharing. And what we found in the platforms that we've explored is that going back the other way does not necessarily alert the user, and they need to be cued that that's happening so that they can redirect themselves appropriately. Web tour. Many platforms, again, allow you to launch a web tour, enabling people to follow you along on the web. Please understand, in most of the platforms, that only the first web link can be followed by the screen reader. Every time that a presenter then does a link from within that web page or on that website, that cannot be followed by somebody using a screen reader. So once I've gone, I can go to the initial web page or link, but once I then now start to link within that page further, I'm going to lose my screen reader. So suggestion, we've done this in several presentations and it works well, is that you load each link that you wish to show your participants through a web tour separately into the platform so that the participant can follow the tour. So this requires additional prep on the presenter side to have each link that they want to visit separate instead of just being able to go to a website and click, 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 click. Can't do that. I need to have each link separately entered into the system. Again, same queuing issues to enable individuals to know to focus back, switch their focus back to the whiteboard because they will be taken off of the whiteboard. So my last slide here before we go to questions again, just I said I was going to mention the issues of archiving. Should all sessions, if you're going to record them, they need to have the same level of accessibility as a live session did. So make sure your recording captures all your captioning, that it's synchronous with the audio and video. Verify your playback format is accessible with assistive technology. So you may have a different format used for playback. Make sure that everything, again, in whatever your playback format is, that everything is labeled, that it can be read by a screen reader, that it's scalable. Same issues we talked about with the live needs to be available in your archive. Including a copy of your handout materials for download with the recording that ensured that you have an accessible version available of that as well. And consider providing an MP3 file for review of the audio only. That may be preferable for someone who doesn't have the visual content. They may just want to listen along, or anyone may want to just listen along. So it's got a more of a universality if you consider those options. So we'll take questions at this time, and I apologize. A lot of content to go through here, and laying down also trying not to talk too fast. So Judith, you want to give me some questions?
Great. Thanks, Robin. That was wonderful. And yes, you and I have the same issue. We've got so much information that we both tend to talk quite fast. That is an accessibility issue, but it's lovely content. So thank you so much for that. A couple of questions which did come up. The first one was, is it required to provide advanced copies of PowerPoint presentations which are converted into Braille or information for screen readers? And I think you answered the question about why it would be a good thing, but is it required?
Well, I think you have to go through the same issue. We're talking about making the program fully accessible to someone. So the issue is what is your issue of conveying the information? What is the limitation that somebody has or what they're needing? So let's start first with providing individuals content. Many, as I said earlier, many presenters do not want their content to be shared with people as far as handouts and things of that nature. So in that regard, there's nothing that would say I have to provide that content. However, as a reasonable accommodation, you may have an individual, just as we have issues in the classroom or we have issues at a public meeting or anything of that nature, no different would be the consideration here. So if you have somebody for the purposes of accessibility, I'm going to be attending the meeting and I am going to be using my assistive technology. I would like to have the, I don't read Braille, I need the agenda in advance so that I can prepare or load it onto my own assistive technology so I have it available on site to be able to scroll through. You know, all of those things would have to be part of that consideration. So your same issues of meeting the requirements or the needs for materials and alternative formats are in play here, and you would have to go from a case-by-case basis looking at what are you providing and how you would be conveying information. And again, always think about having the conversation with the individual in regards to the formats that you're going to be providing that information in. Somebody, you know, may prefer Braille, but if electronic is equally effective for that person, you know, you do have that option, but you do have to give consideration to why somebody needed Braille, and then that you would have the same issues depending if you're a Title II or Title III entity related to your defenses. But, you know, if you're just disseminating information to the public, you definitely have to make it available in formats that are accessible. And then the secondary thing is if somebody needs something in advance because of an accessibility, first you're considering the request for information in advance and providing in advance as an accommodation issue, and then secondary to that would be what format you would provide that in advance.
Great, thank you. I'm going to summarize essentially a number of questions which came through about the same thing, and that is the thorny issue of which platform is the most accessible, are there some that are better than others, is there a list of platforms that allow you to see some of the accessibility controls? In other words, how do you actually go about actually figuring out which platform is going to be the most accessible? It's a tricky one.
Oh, it's a tricky one. It's a loaded question. You know, we have worked and explored numerous different platforms. There have been some, I don't know, evaluations that have been done onto platforms. Some of those are older now and not reflecting some of the newer features and newer changes that have been made. So, for example, University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana did a review, now it's been several years now, four or five, whereby they reviewed a variety of different platforms. But again, at the time, and technology is changing so rapidly, where they did a side-by-side comparison of major features of those platforms to give you a sense of that. I have not seen an updated of that. I've looked and I have not found an updated of that. If anybody in participating today knows of that, you want to put it in your, send it to the moderators, we'd be happy to post it for everybody if you're aware of that. The issues of, you know, there's major providers out there. You've got, you know, your ones that are used a lot in education, so your Blackboard or your WebCT, your different companies who provide different products. Adobe is another provider of that. You've got your go-to people that do go-to meeting, go-to webinar, go-to desktop, all kinds of, they have go-to platforms. A lot of them have, there's tons of them out there. the best way for you, because it's so many things than just the accessibility, because it also it's combined with accessibility and your audience. It's combined with cost issues. What can I afford, et cetera. So it's not a one-stop say that this platform is best because it's fully most accessible. I think it really becomes an issue of looking at as you explore the platforms that are out there and you look at them, what information does that vendor make available to you about accessibility? Sometimes it's just an issue of going on that vendor's website and doing a search for accessibility and what comes up. Many times we'll go and we'll hear about a new platform and we'll go to that vendor's website, and the first thing we'll do is Google or search on their website for accessibility. Sometimes we'll come up with accessibility, we'll show up, but it'll talk about accessibility in the context of, you know, making it accessible for all your audience, not from accessibility, disability accessibility side of it, but making it accessible because, you know, people can access it from home or from work or from their car or whatever. So you have to understand that, and, you know, that's a, if I get that kind of a response back, I know right there I'm not even going to go further with that platform because they aren't even making any information available. The platforms that do have a lot of accessibility features as part of them, they put that information right up front. That information is easily available in their support pages, in their Q&A pages, et cetera. Some of the companies have created VPATs under the Section 508 process because they sell or are interested in purchasing by entities covered by Section 508. So one can explore the VPATs to see what the has been submitted as a VPAT, and that's a voluntary compliance template that is not required, but filled out by entities who are interested in their products being considered by federal agencies. So one can, it's a template, accessibility template, so they can do that and look at those kinds of things. There's also, you know, look around you, go to the entities and people around you that you know that are doing this work and talk to them. That, you know, many entities in the education arena, many entities in the business arena are involved in, engaged in accessibility. So there are providers. So for example, I look at somebody like the U.S. Business Leadership Network. If you're a business entity, you know, they're very aware of these. They're business focused. They're making sure that their program is accessible. Talk to them. Ask them what they're using for their platforms. Talk to educational entities about what they're using for their platforms and such. So find out what, you know, what works best for you. And there's so many considerations that when you talk about accessibility, it can be firewall issues, it can be, ease of access issues, cost issues, how many participants in a room you can have. So the platform might be accessible, but it has a 25-person limitation. That may be a factor for you. So I can't give you, and we would not endorse any one product, but we would be more than happy, you know, if you want to contact us or contact other entities that we are aware of, we can refer you to talk about what experiences we've had in different platforms. But we just really shy away from in this kind of context because it will be outdated tomorrow. I could do this and this thing's going to be recorded and it's posted, and 2 weeks from now another platform could change. So I'm very careful about that, and that's why we really don't have that in this session.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Robin. A couple of just points that people have made, not for comment, but just for the general audience. Somebody has mentioned that polls are not accessible to people who use speech recognition. So something like Dragon Naturally Speaking, people are not able to use the polls. So that's number one. The other one was that the latest versions of Office and Acrobat do a pretty good job of including accessibility features, but as in all things, you still do need to test. Two other questions, and we just about have 30 seconds for each one of these questions. The first one is it ever okay to ask if there's anyone participating that will be using assistive technology, such as screen reading and captioning? And then secondly, is a well-crafted Word document better than a PowerPoint in terms of accessibility? So those, I think, will be the last two questions we're able to do. So just a brief response on those would be great.
Sure. So the first one was the, I'm sorry, when you give them both at once, the one was about the Word document, correct?
So yes, that's the one.
Right. So a Word document that's been, you know, appropriately formatted, would be accessible as a handout and could be provided as an accessible format. So taking your content and converting it into a properly structured Word document or an RTF rich text format would be an accessible format, yes, for a handout.
Great, thanks. And then the second question was, is it ever okay to ask if there's anyone participating that will be using any assistive technology device?
So this goes down to your issue of planning your program, knowing your audience. So for example, if I'm doing a class and teaching or a program, it would be personal to ask if anyone needs an accommodation to participate in this program, same as I would do if it was live. I may want to give some descriptors of that in there, so because it's different if I'm using a live session. I might be asking for real-time captioning. You may be making it known that make examples needing real-time captioning, et cetera. So it goes about how you promote and how you advertise the program. So we always advertise our programs up front as being real-time captions. You don't have to ask for captioning, but that's because we archive our programs. And if we're going to archive our programs, I don't know who my audience is going to be. So in my live session, I may not actually need captioning because nobody's going to use it. But if I'm recording it and going to be making it available for later use, I don't know who my audience is going to be. And so that's a reason for captioning to be provided. So that I can ensure that my recording is and I don't have to do a retrofit after the fact. It's very expensive and very time consuming to have to take a recording and re-record it to embed captioning after the fact of a situation to make it accessible. And it is not equivalent to post a recording and repost a written transcript side by side to it. It's again a different view, a different access. I can't follow along the same. Captioning follows with the slides. The transcript's just going to be a running set of text, so it can be easily. I can get lost and distracted as I'm trying to follow it. It's not equivalent. It's not an equivalency issue.
Great, thank you. We're just about completely out of time, and I guess the last question before I thank you very much for your contribution, Robin, and that is a couple of people have asked the question of accommodations for people who are deaf or somebody who might be blind and deaf. And once we finish with that one, then I think we're going to have to call that a day for questions. And please ask, if you do have other questions, please do send them to us. We'd be happy to answer your questions accordingly. So Robin, I'll let you answer that last question if you do have a few minutes.
Sure. So I did ask to just put up a resource slide that are some great resources about accessible documents, making presentations accessible, how to deal with PowerPoint accessibility, et cetera. So that's available to you from some very good resources if you're not familiar with them already. For people who are deaf who do not use captioning, who need sign language interpreting, this is one of the more difficult things as far as incorporating into webinars that we have found, and a lot has to do with the quality of your feed, and the quality when you're talking about using basically remote sign language interpretation is what you're using in that context. So if you use the video option that's available within your webinar platform, there are limitations to that because the you have to really be ensured that your interface and the captioner's interface is a high speed, high quality image and such, the background, all of those kinds of things. So same things go into play there. And then that your user side, it's going to be really dependent upon their receiving it. Are they using a high enough speed connection to be able to get a good high quality image through that video? So there's a lot of variables in using the video for sign language interpreters. The video that's built into the system. Again, one you could look at a second option. It wouldn't be integrated into the system, however, of a remote video captioning window that somebody would open. But again, it goes back to your two browsers. This is an area that we have not solved 100% in the webinar formatting process yet is the quality of the video feed, whether you're using it through your video option in your platform or using it as a separate. And again, if you're using it separate, it's not integrated into the system from a recording perspective and does require somebody to open two browsers at the same time. And it's always going to be dependent upon the recipient. It's a responsibility on my side that I've got the entity who's conveying or who's transmitting to be on high-speed internet, but you also on the other side have the recipient being on high-speed internet. And so when we talk about it from use a video remote interpreting in hospitals or other venues, there's a clear responsibility in the ADA under the communication requirements that there be these factors of high-speed connections, quality of the broadband and the screen and the conveyance device, like the video screen and such, being of high quality. That's a lot harder to control when you're using these video within the webinar platform. So there's still more that needs to be done in this area to incorporate that. From a deafblind perspective, again, you've got the same issues of how you're going to convey oral as well as video or visual content. There's more and more technology out there where individuals have refreshable braille on their systems and things of that nature, so they could, you know, receive that information the same as anyone else is in their technology, but it's much more difficult to provide that. Again, you're from a distance format, so I really don't have great suggestions on that other than to consider the needs and how you might be able to meet those needs either through providing braille content of the presentation and the person on that aside from the oral content, again, a transcript or something that would be conveyed through braille.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And I'm afraid we're just clean out of time. Lots of interesting questions, lots of interesting information, and a great deal of food for thought. So, Robin, once again, really appreciate your contribution to this. It's been lovely. Thank you so much. And we would encourage people to contact their local regional ADA center, the 800 number to get you to wherever you might be in the country to your local regional ADA center is 800-949-4232 if you have additional questions, and people will be very happy to answer those questions for you. We look forward to hearing from you and also to seeing everybody at our next webinar, which will be on the 27th of March. A little bit for the tech geeks out there, we're going to be talking about accessible rich internet applications, or ARIA. This has to do with web design. So thank you once again for everybody for attending, and we look forward to seeing you all again March 27th, and thank you, Robin.
Thank you.